So we're all in our 60s. That's kind of the theme of this thing. And we've all been married a long time, like 42 here.
37 coming up.
37 coming up.
All to the same woman.
That's, yes. Husband of one wife.
It is a precious thing. So a key of longevity. I read Bonhoeffer the other day, and I tweeted about it, I think. And he said to a couple he was marrying, the covenant from this day forward sustains the love, not the love, the covenant. And I, at 42 years of marriage, feel very strongly that needs emphasizing, that romance and falling in love is a beautiful thing, and re-falling in love again and again is important. And that re-falling in love after seasons of pain can be sustained only if you elevate covenant above those affections and that romance. So that's kind of my main message to the younger fellas and gals who would say, what do you want to tell us about our marriages? And I would want to say, you have covenanted, and God has created, God has united this, and you have covenanted. That covenant exists. It exists. Mm-hmm. Your affections, they exist, and then they don't exist. You get angry, and then you don't get angry. You feel so mad, you'd wonder, where did all that affection go? And that can be reborn because there's this massive platform.
In popular terms, I heard that on British TV when I was doing doctoral studies in the early 70s. There was this old man who was being interviewed who had been married for something like 60 years or 65 years, and his wife was there with him. And the interviewer saying, during all this time, haven't you ever considered divorce? And he bristled. Divorce? Divorce? Never, never. Murder often, divorce never. No, obviously you can make that sound ridiculous, but it's got a point.
It does have a point.
I agree. You know, Lewis Smedes wrote an article called The Power of Promising in Christianity Today back in the 80s, and he was already up there in age. And he was talking about his marriage promise, and he said, my wife has been married to five men. Every one of them has been me. And he says the one thing, the thread that kept all five of them together is my promise. My promise is I will be there for you, I will be faithful to you. And he's trying to get across the fact that you change, your spouse changes. And it reminds me a little bit of Stanley Hauerwas, who says you always marry the wrong person, which means even if you think you're marrying the right person, marriage is such a big deal that once you actually get together, you start to change each other. Mm-hmm. And so the basis of your marriage can't be the feeling, and the basis of your marriage can't even be we're just kindred spirits, because your spirits will go in and out of being kindred. Mm-hmm. The thing that keeps it is the promise. I made a promise. I've made an appointment with you in the future to be your husband every year. I think you're absolutely right. It's a covenant. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and we've got to go because each of us has things to do here. But I would just underline, if that sounds too duty-oriented for people, that's the ground in which the flower grows. That's the ground. Because if you're in a season right now where the flower is wilted and you think the solution is to pull the plant up, that's not the solution. The ground of covenant, the ground of promise, the ground of no divorce, maybe murder,
but no
divorce. That's the ground where it can re-flourish. And it does. I just testify from 42 years that falling in love with my wife again and again is a very beautiful thing.
And ideally, that is nurtured at least in part by grounding marriage itself in Scripture in a big framework.
Yep.
We're made by God and for God. This is His design, not my design. There is a huge typology between husband and wife and Christ and the church. We're saying something about Christ and the church by the way we act. So, in other words, the renewal of the covenant is not merely, I use merely advisedly, an act of will. It is itself grounded in what the new covenant is about, and what the gospel is about, and who God is, and so on as well.
We are testifying by our perseverance in covenant keeping something about Christ and the church in covenant with each other.
That's exactly
right. We lie about Christ, and we lie about what the church is obliged to do if we
leave her. Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, good evening. I'm Antoinette. I'm married to Adrian. We've got three beautiful kids, Mark, John, and little Rosie. Rosie is quite famous. We're not. Everybody knows that I'm Rosie's mom, but everybody knows Rosie. Nobody knows me. So Mark is, 12 years old, John 10, and Rosie, John 8, and Rosie, she's now 5 years old. We adopted her.
Married 13 years. What other numbers do we need here?
Married for 13 years. Rosie, we adopted when she was about 10 months old. She's in our family. And, yeah, we've been with 3CI for 8-9 years.
8.5.
Yeah. Okay, I'll see you later.
Okay, wonderful. What an incredible crowd. This is amazing. Intimidating, but amazing. That's beautiful. I think one of the things that stands out for me, I mean, if I look at that video clip, it's almost like every single one around the table there is trying to answer the same question. And that question is, what keeps a marriage? What takes it all the way to the end? I don't know if you noticed in terms of how long have you been married, how long have you been married, collectively 116 years worth of marriage in those three men, and all of them agree unanimously, covenant. The fact that you've made a promise, which is quite wild, you know, you kind of think of all the aspects of life and the aspects of our marriage and what makes it go well and what, you know, makes us struggle. But covenant is huge. So for the guys that have already got married, it's kind of like we're speaking retrospectively about what you've already done and what you commit to every single day. For the guys that are here that are not yet married, whether you're engaged or you're dating, this is incredibly helpful because you know exactly what you're heading towards. And when you enter that covenantal relationship, when you're exchanging vows, you're going to have a way better understanding of what you're doing on that day. And hopefully you won't be worrying too much about all the paraphernalia and the stuff that everyone worries about on their wedding day. But actually, that's incredible covenant-cutting moment, big in God's eyes. For those of you not married yet, it's equally important to know. So Bonhoeffer, the quote that I thought was just absolutely profound, he says, the covenant from this day forward, when he was marrying someone, he looked at the couple directly and he said, the covenant from this day forward sustains the love, not the love, the covenant. Can I say that again? The covenant from this day forward sustains the love, not the love, the covenant. I mean, aren't we all so fixated on the love aspect? The feelings of affection and whether we're feeling right about this and we're falling in love and falling out of love and all of our feelings are at play and we think that somehow these feelings of love, these affectionate feelings is the very thing that's going to hold us to the end, that's going to make this covenant last. He's saying, no, it's actually the other way around. It's the covenant that's going to get your feelings all the way through to the end. John Piper said one thing. He said, the difference is your covenant is the only thing that exists, always. Affections can exist, but then they can wane. Feelings come and go. I mean, so much in life is just coming and going. Then we've got money, then we don't have money. Then things are spacious, then things are tight. Then we feel like we're just romantically in love with one another. And then, my goodness, what the heck is going on at the moment in our marriage? So we all have those seasons. But the one thing that's consistent, says John Piper, let me not speak about him in the first name, I don't know him, never met him, my buddy John. What he says is covenant is the only thing in your marriage that stays constant all the way through, which kind of is the hint towards that's the thing that's going to keep it, not the other things that are up and down the whole time. So I thought it was a profound way to start and a profound way to intro the subject of covenant. So what is a covenant? Covenant's all over the Bible. It's the big story of the Bible. So a whole bunch of stories in the Bible, a whole bunch of accounts of people entering into a covenant, humans with humans, humans with God. But actually, the entire meta-narrative of the Bible is a story about redemption, and the basis of that story of redemption is one of covenant. So covenant that gets entered into between two humans is a horizontal thing. Covenant that gets entered into with God is a vertical thing. When you get married, both of them happen, which kind of lifts it to a whole new level. We're not just entering into a covenant with a person yet. When I exchange my vows, and we'll get to the vows just now, we'll take a look at that, but there's two aspects to it. The one is before God, and then the other one is to my significant other. So there's a vertical and a horizontal component to this. But the horizontal one, which is between husband and wife, if you go to page 4 of this book, hopefully you've all got one of them, please hang on to this throughout the duration. So we're not handing out more of these. This is your book. You can use it to make notes, scribble a few things. Stephen will make reference to some of the questions when I'm done. But if you look at page 4, how's this for a definition? Not my definition, but it's a good one. It says, the essence of marriage is, speaking about covenant, is a sacrificial commitment to the good of the other. I mean, that alone is a game changer. We don't even have to read much more. So, sacrificial commitment. What I'm bringing to this relationship is me committing a selfless, sacrificial commitment to you for your benefit, not mine. That's what that's saying. That means that love is more fundamentally action than emotion, and that the good of the relationship takes precedence over the immediate needs of the individual. Now, I don't know about you, but my needs tend to feel a heck of a lot more important on many occasions than the good of the relationship or the needs of Antoinette. Somehow those things just come out there, but sacrificial commitment to the good of the other, basically saying, I'm going to love you through action, that's what I'm committing to, and I'm going to put the needs of you and the needs of this relationship as more important than my own needs. That's a covenant that's been entered into. So when we read some of the covenants that are entered into in the Bible, there's some very classic ones. But it's like a serious thing, you know. It's like and the covenant was never a kind of for a period of time. It was this kind of until one of us dies kind of thing. This is it. And then you've got this incredible vertical covenant that takes place, and it's the story of the Bible. Starts in Genesis 15 with Abraham, and God enters into a covenant with Abraham. But I don't want to go into all the detail, but there's a whole bunch of animal sacrifices and ceremony, and God's going through this entering of a covenant. He's cutting a covenant with mankind. Abraham was the representative of all of us children of Abraham. So he was just the guy that God chose to say, I'm going to enter into a covenant with you. But even in that, he puts him to sleep, and then the text speaks about a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch moving among the animals. My belief is that was Jesus in his humanity and in his divinity entering into a covenant on our behalf, representing God, representing man. And as a result, we can be in a relationship with Jesus. We can be reconciled to the Father as a result of that covenant. But again, it's a never-ending. Not conditions attached, not, hey, if you guys can bring your side of the bargain, if you could do a couple of things. God lavishly opens his heart towards us. He says, I'm going to enter into a covenant with you. And it allows God to say things like, I will be your God. You will be my people. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. Never. Now, I take that as a scripture, and forgive me for taking some license, but if I had to take that as covenantal language and look at my wife and say, I will be your husband, you will be my wife, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you. That's a big promise. Now, if you got your vows right on the day, which I'm hoping was, whether you said the right things or the wrong things in your heart, that's what you should have said. I'll be your husband, you be my wife. You be my husband, I'll be your wife. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. Because as we're exchanging vows, we are speaking covenantally with one another. I am coming into this relationship with this incredible sacrificial commitment for your benefit, not my own. That's huge. Did anyone miss that on their wedding day? Like, thinking back. I know I did. I mean, I've understood these things a lot better later on. On the day, I was like flipping nervous and thinking about my speech and completely blown away by this beautiful woman coming down the aisle. I mean, I don't know what I was saying. I don't remember a single thing. But something happened, and as we have grown, I have grown in my understanding of what I committed to on that day. It's an incredible thing. So, covenantal love. The definition that I like the most that I found about covenantal love is in the Jesus Storybook Bible. I have read it on occasion. It's for kids, but it's great. And it defines covenantal love as this: a never stopping, never giving up, unbreaking, always and forever love. It's a beautiful description of covenantal love, eh? See, with covenantal love, there's no renewal date 5 years down the line or 10 years down the line. You know that they're doing that now in Europe, some. Where are they doing it?
Scandinavia,
of all places. 5 year renewable contract. So if you don't renew, it's seen as it's done. So you need to renew it. So that's the worldview of marriage. Let's try it for a while, but let's keep our options open. Let's just kind of see how this goes. God's view and a biblical definition of covenant, it doesn't come to an end. What's the line in your vows? Till? Yeah. Till murder. Till death do us part. There's no renewal. There's no expiring or anything like that. It's perspiring, but not expiring. It's this forever promise. And in Genesis 2, it's kind of like the lays the groundwork for the basis of covenant within marriage. And it says this. I'm reading from the King James Version. I do think this is the first time I've done it. But somehow, I just love the language that they use better than all the others. It says, therefore, shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Cleave, one flesh. That's beautiful. Cleaving. The understanding of cleaving and what cleaving means in terms of trying to understand why that word gets used, it's like gluing two things together. They become one. It's like there was two, we've now got one. It's like you are now one flesh. Which is exactly why God hates divorce. You know, never see God kind of, hey, you're not allowed to divorce. Yeah, here's another rule that I've got for you. No divorcing allowed. With a finger, it's not that. Because he knows that bond is of such a nature that you have cleaved to another person, you've become a one flesh. When divorce happens, it's a tearing of a one fleshness, which can only be painful, can only be hurtful, can only have serious consequences down the line as far as what it means for those two people, and if there are children involved, it's like the ripple. Now, in God, he can restore, he can redeem. So for those of that have been through that, you can testify to the fact that that's painful. And we can have faith that God restores and he redeems. But when you're on this side and you're contemplating that, understand that what God says, I do not like divorce. It's coming from a place of, I love you that much. My heart for you is so filled with compassion, the last thing I want you to do is to miss what I intended with this relationship and to behave in a way that actually is not what I've instituted as far as my design with marriage. So I want you to lay hold of these things and get to a place that this thing stays this thing, because when you pull those two things apart, it's like the glued apart aspect of it, it rips and it causes damage, it causes hurt. So that's God's heart towards divorce. He's not throwing all the rules at us. He's just, he loves us. In essence, we have this binding agreement. Now, I think a lot of people hear the whole concept of binding, and I mean, I get thrilled by the definition of covenantal love being never-ending and always and forever, and like that fuels me, the fact that I know I'm going to be with my wife in that way. But when you're on this side of marriage, sometimes you can look at that and say, whoa, hold on a second, whoa. How's that a good thing? Like, that sounds like prison. You know, you've just like, you've put yourself into this thing, and it's this always and forever until death do us part. My goodness, really? That long? Is this really what I'm signing up for? And the phrase that we hear so often on TV, you know, in movies and sitcoms, it's like this thing of the piece of the paper, you know. Do we really need a piece of paper to prove how much we love one another? Surely I don't need a piece of paper. I don't need a marriage certificate to prove how much I love you. Obviously, you can see how much I love you. Actually, what that person is saying when they say that is, I don't love you enough to bring the piece of paper into this relationship because I want to keep my options open. So if I bind myself to you, that's an exclusive thing and that's forever thing, which means my options are completely just taken out. So I don't need a piece of paper to show how much I love you means I don't love you enough. And if you, let's talk to the guys that are engaged and dating. If you're moving to that place, you must realize that when your significant other or partner or whatever says, I want the piece of paper to ratify what's happening in my heart, you must understand the depth of that commitment when the understanding of covenant is there, as opposed to, you know, oh, well, let's just get married because that's the done thing to do and I'd love to have a family. But to say covenantally we're going to bind ourselves to one another and I love you that much that I'm actually going to say no to all the other options. I'm going to bind myself to this exclusive relationship that will be like that for the rest of my days. That's a glorious love gesture. That's probably the greatest expression of love that you can have. I mean, if I know, let's say we go back 13 years, prior to Antoinette and I getting married, I would have known that there, well, let's say hypothetically, that she had some imperfections. Just the two. Yeah. She was too beautiful. It was a, yeah. So I know of some imperfections. She knows of some imperfections. But knowing that as we get married, those imperfections are going to become more prevalent as I get to know her. And yet we're still saying, yeah, we're going to do this. This is what we're going to do. Knowing that we're going to get old and that we're not necessarily going to be that attractive to anyone, for that matter. And all of the realities of like life and all of that's lying ahead. But yeah, no, we still want to do this. It's an incredible expression of love. So that's why you need the paper. Why do you need the piece of paper? Because somehow it brings you to that day where you get married and you're exchanging vows, you understand that there is an exchange of love here that's more than just a romantic kind of affection-based feelings, ooh, he makes my stomach turn kind of, or whatever happens. That sounds like a bad thing. But it's more than those, like, fluffy feelings. Because this isn't going to, I mean, you know, like, the first couple of years, great, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, 40 years from now, things will be different. But I get that. And even though I get that, I'm still binding myself to you right now. Because I want that piece of paper. I want to be yours. And I want you to be mine for the rest of my days. That's a beautiful expression of love. It's a great expression of love. So that's why we need the piece of paper. The other thing that it does, this piece of paper, is that it protects us from running out too quickly. I think God's genius, though. You think of people that just go out, like dating or living together. To end things is a lot quicker. Marriage is not that easy. I'm not talking about the practicalities and stuff like that. I'm talking about the fact that there's something of the providence of God that rests on your marriage. He blessed you with this marriage. He brought the two of you together. And somehow, I want a divorce. You can be brazen in how you say it, but actually deep down inside, you understand you're under the providence of God. There's something of His hand at work, and that played itself out from the day that we got married until today, and it's not such an easy thing. You look at the statistics, you might think, oh no, it's a lot easier, but there's something of a delay. There's something of a, we don't make the decision in a week. It's like this thing builds over a period of time, and then eventually we just, dam all breaks and we can't make it work. But somehow there's time, and in that time, I think God does many miraculous things to save marriages, to put people with other people that can walk a road, or it might even be a course like this. I don't know. There might be couples here that said, this is our last go. We're going to give it a go. But there's something of God's providence that just His hands upon us. Because He blessed that day. That was His day, more than it was ours. The next thing is that it's public, so there's this accountability. So when we do it in front of a whole bunch of people, the public aspect of it, it's like it just brings accountability. It's like, hey, if I divorce, it's like, oh, all these people. But I think it's part of God's genius. And the fact that we've made a personal promise, it cuts into our own integrity. So you must know when it's got to a point where we're saying, okay, listen, we're just going to end it. It's because it's that bad. Or it's because you're just not falling into the framework that God has set and you're missing it completely. Our approach with this course, I'm going to just go a little bit ahead and then I'll come back, is we want to give you a biblical view of marriage. So we're not going to spend a heck of a lot of time talking about conflict resolution. We're going to give you the reasons why there would be conflict and how you don't have conflict. Because if we give you those boundaries and we kind of say, biblically, that's what God says. I mean, He doesn't give us a heck of a lot. He gives us the broad outline of marriage. So we just want to paint that for you. And then we want to say, if you stay within those lines, you wouldn't need resolution of conflict because there wouldn't be a heck of a lot of conflict. But if you come on the outside of those lines, trouble cometh exceedingly quicketh. I read the King James Version today for the first time. It's in me. So we must know that it's actually not that hard. I'm saying the principles, the framework that God's given us. How we live it out, and we're going to get there as well. So we're going to put the lines there, and then right at the end, we're going to speak about the power for marriage. So how do we stay within those lines or within that framework? So that's sometimes hard because we're fighting self-centeredness. But we want to give you that framework. And we want to say, if you stay in there, then we're good to go. If you come on the outside of that, then we've got issues. Okay? So that's where we're heading. If we look at where we are now, what we're wanting to say is covenantally, we need to know that that's part of God's framework. So if we understand that our commitment to our spouse is one of a sacrificial commitment to the good of the other, not me, I reckon that should solve about 99% of the problems if we both operate like that. I mean, if you think about it, if we actually lived like that on a consistent basis, we wouldn't be fighting about anything. We'd both be glowing. It would be like, living for me. It's like it's for my benefit, and I'm living for your benefit, and we like sacrificially committing to one another. What's the problem? So I don't want to simplify. I don't want to make it sound easy. It's just there is a framework, and we're going to work on that framework for the sake of this course. And then it allows you guys to work out the specifics of who you are as people, because we're all different personalities. I can't put my relationship that I have with Antoinette on you and say, well, this is how we do things. This is how we do our budgeting. This is how we make decisions around these things. There are some helpful things, but really, guys, you've got to take your lives and who you are as individuals, and you just got to put it into God's framework, and that's your safe place, because that's like the owner's manual of, you know, you get a car, you go to the owner's manual. And the owner's manual is going to tell you, because the owner's manual is put together by the guy who actually designed the car. He knows better. So submit to what the manual says. Don't think you know better and you're going to start pulling things out and owner's manual. So here we're saying, God knows better. He instituted marriage. It's his design. So we go to his word, which is, in this context, the manual, and it tells us how. When it comes to covenant, I think the engine aspects of a car would be saying that's what keeps this thing running. That's what's going to get you from A to B. Within the context of marriage, it's covenant. Covenant's the engine. It's like it's the thing that keeps us running. So what other things do we get from the piece of paper? I think we get incredible stability and incredible security. A lot of people, I said just now, they have this view of marriage as a prison. I think it's one of the most freeing things in the world. Because with this lady, I can just be myself. Because I know she's not running off. I know the better for worse things. She's proved that her love towards me is of such a nature that it doesn't matter if my farts stink. She's not going anywhere. Now, there's something of us growing in God, and you know, so this is not license to become pigs. But they don't stink, actually. No. But there's just stuff. There's stuff that Gary and Nolene, only Gary and Nolene know. None of us know. They know. Oh, look at those little giggles. And it's true for every single one of you here. It's like just there's stuff that you know about one another. And some of it's light, some of it's like frivolous and silly habits and, you know, toilet seat stuff and, you know, caps left off the toothpaste and those kind of vibes. And then some of the stuff is a little bit deeper. But actually, we know one another in such a way that within the confines of this binding agreement that we have committed to one another, it's like you're free in there. You can be yourself. No more pretense. No more, like, let me put my best foot forward. That's what you do when you date. It's like, I need to impress this person. We don't try and impress one another. We just love one another. So the fact that it's freeing, that you actually can be vulnerable, and that there are these things that only the two of us know, and that you've got all your things that only the two of you know, I think it's a precious thing about marriage. It's a beautiful thing about marriage. But you can be free in that. Not feel like you're captivated or imprisoned as a result of it. You're free in that space because you're with the one that loves you irrespective of everything. And you can just be yourself. There's a story I'm toying with the idea of whether I should share or not. Anyway, I'm now down the line. That kind of competition that they ran in Jacaranda, the radio, was they would have an object in the studio, and I think some people have heard this. Gary knows it. Yeah, a little bit of a laugh here. So the object that was in the studio for that particular day was salt. And a whole bunch of people phoning in, and as they phone and as they guess, so the kind of guys in the studio are kind of saying yes, no, or whatever, and they get closer and closer, and you're kind of picking up different cues. And it was taking really long for them to get to salt. So eventually this lady phones. She guesses, and it's wrong. But she's kind of like, please, just give me another clue. Just give me another chance. But because they're so desperate, it's like, hey, how long are we going to carry on with this thing? The one guy, the one DJ, he just shouts out, man, ek hoor dit by my se eiers in die oggend. To which she shouted out, babbelpoeier. So those kind of things is no one else knows, but for that thing, in her moment of excitement, it became public knowledge. I can literally see her husband driving, listening to the radio, and losing all control and going straight off the road, walking into his office that day. So we have all these little secrets and all these little things about us that, being in this relationship, we can just... That's probably one of the ways I would describe our relationship, or like how I feel around Antoinette, is just a sigh of, just good. I could just be myself. Because I'm not insecure in our relationship. Because I know we have entered into a binding, selfless, as much as, you know, the selfish aspect is always going to come up. But our commitment, our decision, what we have chosen to in this never-ending, unbreaking, always and forever kind of love allows me to just be me and allows Antoinette to just be. And we laugh at one another the whole time. It's beautiful. It's like I'm free in that space. I can't think to date again. It's like, oh, it's horrible. This is the best place I can be right now. So don't ever think that you're captive or you're imprisoned in something. Because this is a relationship where you're free to be yourself. You can be vulnerable because the bond is that strong, because it is set in the way that it's set, and it's a covenantal thing. So the other thing is that it's God's design, so we've spoken about the owner's manual, and the only thing that I'll say there is that he knows best. He knows, I mean, he's perfect wisdom, divine wisdom. So his way of putting marriage together is on the basis of a covenantal bond. And that's got to be enough. I mean, of all the other things I've said, that alone should be enough to say, out of reverence to Christ, out of my relationship with God and knowing his character and who he is, and if he says this is the way, this is the biblical representation, the essence of what marriage is a covenantal bond, then I'll submit to that. Because who am I to say that it's anything else? So, let's leave that. Part of trying to understand what covenant is also talking about what it's not. And what it's not is very much how the world sees it. So, I just want to cover two things. The one is that the worldview is that marriage is a contractual thing. I don't necessarily mean filling in a contract and signing it at the bottom. It's like a thought process of it being contractual. So when you enter into a contract, what do? You're bargaining. Like, let's set the terms. I want to hear your side. I'm going to give you my side. And it's like, let's edge a little way here. Let's move a little way there. Let's try and find a place where ultimately I'm actually just worried about myself. So can we bargain? Can we contractually work this thing out so that I'm safe, that I'm sorted? Okay, so it's me negotiating terms for my benefit. Covenantally, if you're thinking covenantally, it's saying, I'm entering into a relationship with you, not for my benefit, but for your benefit. So it's two very different schools of thought. Biblical view, worldview. But that worldview, I mean, we're getting it all the time. In all forms of media, everything that we're watching, our own natural self that gets shaped over the years, it is just about me. So can we just negotiate some terms here so that ultimately I'm going to find my happiness? That's thinking contractually. Covenantally, it's not about me. It's actually about you. And the beauty is if both of you get it, well, then you're both sorted. But somehow we don't get it. We just want to try and protect ourselves. We just want to, like, as long as I'm okay, as long as I'm sorted. So what is best for me versus what is best for you? If we read in Ephesians 5, which is kind of like the big chapter on marriage, it is in this little booklet that we've handed out on page 2. But the one verse that I want to read is in verse 25. It says, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her." Love your wives in the same way that Christ loved the church. And the way in which Christ loved the church was that he gave himself up for her. And then it expounds that a little bit. And then in verse 31 it says, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh." So it's quoting that same Genesis 2 text there. But what Paul's saying is, for you to love your wife in that way, the only way that you can express that kind of love is within a covenantal relationship. It's not going to happen in any other kind of relationship. So biblically, as a support to what I'm saying, Paul says, we've got to love our wives, and that's a reciprocated thing. It's just stating it from the one side, but it does mean that we are to love one another in that way. But love your wives in the same way that Christ loved the church, and the way in which he loved the church was that he poured himself out. He gave himself up. He sacrificed himself for the good of the church. And we're called to love in the same way. And the only way we find it is to bring that kind of love within a covenantal relationship. Because in any other type of relationship, that type of love would never be expressed. It's only in a covenantal love relationship. Because a covenantal relationship, by definition, is always about the other. And is always self-sacrificial. So, the second thing, so contractual is the one issue that we think in a bargaining way. The other thing is that we think like consumers. I mean, that's just us. It's generally how we operate. So we consume it, like, what's good for me again. So the consumer view would say marriage is based on feelings of romantic love. Oh, I've fallen in love. Like, you'd fall in a pothole. It's like, it doesn't happen that simply. Sorry. Marriage on a covenantal side is based on a sacrificial commitment. It's like a conscious, yeah, I know what I'm getting, like, into as far as this relationship. I know what I'm committing to. It is sacrificial, and I'm willing to go through it. It's not like this feelings-based thing. So consumer is fundamentally about our emotions. Covenantal is fundamentally about our actions. Something that Antoinette's going to touch on now. Consumer is very much a vendor, acceptable cost kind of relationship. So if I've got my cell phone contract with Vodacom, there is a service that they are providing, and there's an acceptable cost to me. So I'm prepared to pay that. And that's our relationship. But if MTN or Cell C or whoever, they come up with a better service at the same cost, why am I still here at Vodacom? Or if they come up with the same service but at a lower cost, like there's less of a cost to me, why wouldn't I move? But that's consumer thinking. And that sounds very like kind of, you know, service provider-ish, but I promise you, consumer-minded thinking thinks like that in marriage. Hey, I can get the same thing for less of a cost to me. Divorce my wife, just live with my secretaries. Doesn't cost me anything. Get the same thing. Oh, I get better, and it costs me the same, so I'm going to make that shift. That's when you're thinking vendor, acceptable cost kind of relationship. kind of covenantal thinking is binding. Doesn't really matter. Doesn't matter what happens outside. There's a better service provider or there's lower costs. It's completely exclusive. There's nothing that's going to come from the outside, and there's no comparison. This is a binding agreement, a covenantal agreement. And then we've covered this point in terms of consumer-minded, is just the individual needs is more important than the relationship, whereas with covenantal, the relationship and the needs of my spouse is more important than mine. So if you go to page 9, there's just an example of wedding vows, typically the type of thing that I would use when I marry people. But you'll see the top section is the vertical before God, and the bottom section is the horizontal. We don't need to read through it now. You can read through it later. The essence of vows, and this is what people get wrong on their wedding day, is that it's not a declaration of present love. It's a promise of future love. So you listen to the vows being exchanged. Listen for that. Because very often, it sounds like just a declaration of present love. I know the speeches are always that. And then the guys would stand there, and they're so nervous about the speech to come. I was there, so I'm including myself in this. I'm so worried about what I'm going to say at the reception. Because, yeah, I'm just repeating after the guy. So, like, let's just get through it. Like, okay, got it. I do. Yes, I promise. Okay, carry on. But when we get to the... Yes, I must really sound like I'm rocking it. You know, it's like my wife must feel like the best woman in the world, and I was just going to pour out my present love to her and just declare the fact that... But actually, we've missed the fact that at the ceremony, there was less of a declaration of present love and more a promise of future love. So I promise too, and you're promising for tomorrow, for the day thereafter, for weeks down the line, for months down the line, for years down the line, when you get to the point where you're both in your 80s, sitting on the patio, dipping rusks so that it's soft enough for you to eat, you are promising on your wedding day for that day. So you get the... There's a promise for future love. I promise too, when we get there, I promise to love you. I promise to honor you, to cherish you, to all these wonderful things that we're channeling in these vows, but it's not for the sake of now, it's for the sake of all the days to come. And that's irrespective of circumstances, which is why we have in sickness and in health. Hey, let me tell you something. There are people in this church that I think are heroes because they're significant others ill. And they're still married to them. But like ill to the point where they're not able to really be a husband or a wife. Like wheelchair bound ill. Like no. It's covenantal. I mean, we're married. Sure. God help us. Eh? We're so selfish. But something of the gospel's got to grip our hearts to say, no, when we enter into this covenantal relationship, we're entering into the very same relationship modeled through Jesus Christ to us. God, fill me with the gospel so that I can love this woman covenantally, irrespective of the circumstances, sickness and in health, whether we've got money or we don't have money. All those things that put pressure on us, I will love you through all of them. We don't know what it's going to be like 20 years from now, but our covenantal bond covers us for that time. Does that make sense? It's irrespective of age. It's because we are going to. I mean, we're getting older. You know, gravity is going to set in, but when my bond is my bond, then actually those things are not dictating why I'm loving you. I'm loving you because I'm in covenant with you. Let's run that clip, Ricky. It's a beautiful clip of a couple, 56 years of marriage. See what they've got to say.
My parents was married for 36 years, and then my mom passed away. But at that time, their marriage was very strong, and it was in a good place. But things weren't always as great. So I'm going to tell you just a brief personal story about my parents, just to illustrate a point. And when I was in high school, my parents' marriage was really in trouble. It didn't go well. My mom suffered from depression, and my dad just really worked hard. He had his own architect's firm, so he traveled a lot, long hours. And my mom had 4 kids in 5 years, so it was a lot. And she tried to raise us basically on her own. So things just got worse, and eventually they were on the brink of divorce, and then something happened. And I think that something was God allowed it in his perfect wisdom. She broke her ankle, a bad break. So she was bedridden for about 3 weeks, I think. As you've seen, I'm not good with numbers. I think it was three weeks. And then another 6 weeks that she wasn't allowed to walk at all. But so probably by default, my dad was forced to be her legs. And he did everything for her. He carried her. He drove her around. He ran all the errands for her. He looked after us. And then something happened. Slowly but surely, they started to fall in love with one another again. And it was such a beautiful thing for me to see as a teenager, because it happened right in front of my eyes. And I remember the one day my mom, she was so overwhelmed by her love that she said to me, "Will you come with me? And I want to go buy lingerie." And I said, "No, that's what you never buy lingerie with your mom, never." So, you're on your own. But how beautiful was that? From almost getting divorced to buying lingerie. But the point that I want to make is that actions of love lead to feelings of love. I'll say it again. Actions of love lead to feelings of love. You see, my dad's emotions and feelings caught up with his behavior, his actions of love. And in return, my mom's heart softened. And it's like she said to me, "Oh, I can't believe that. It's like my eyes have been opened to this wonderful man that I married many years ago." See, the thing is, we don't have control over our feelings or our emotions. If I am sad, Aiden can't tell me, snap out of it and be happy. I don't have control over it. I don't have control over it, but you do have control over your actions. I mean, Paul in Ephesians says he commands husbands to love your wives. Now, you can't command a feeling or you can't command an emotion, but you can command the actions of love, which we should do. Feelings of powerful affection and romance is, like Aiden just said now, it's just not sustainable. And wait, before all the newlyweds and couples that's engaged get discouraged, there's very good news. You can make a promise of to love in action every day and to maintain it and to see it through. And then the beautiful thing, what happens is that love goes way beyond the initial romantic feeling that you felt at first. It just goes to another level. That's exactly what happened with my mom and dad. Many years later, she passed away. She had leukemia. And that last year before she passed away, she was very sick, and it was a very difficult year. But once again, my dad just served her, and he nursed her, and looked after her, and cared for her, and every day he had to inject her. And I remember the look, how they just used to look at one another while he's injecting her. And the bond and the love and the understanding between the two of them, I will have it forever. It will stay with me forever. There was something so beautiful in their relationship. You know, they were one. I could really see they are absolutely one without any words. And what Aiden and I have found is that when we decide to love through action and not with our feelings become actually more constant and the dry spells less, if that makes sense. So I just want to encourage you guys, you know, remember your vows. Go back to those vows, or go back to the day in your mind, and just the things that you promised over one another, just think about it and let that influence your actions as opposed to relying on your feelings to make this relationship work.
Well done. So that's probably one of the most significant practical outworkings of what covenantal love means. And I think the... the best example for me is when a baby is born. I mean, it's like you just serve. Like, there must be other words that we can use to describe that, but it's like you get nothing back. That little pup barbecue is so dependent on you, and you feed and you bath and you change nappies, and it's just poo all over the place. It starts getting its teeth, it's biting you. It gives absolutely nothing back for at least the first 2 years. And it's like little goo-goos and gagas and smiles and those kind of things, and maybe your first word. But seriously, that's not really giving you anything. But the equation, strangely, if we had to put it in those terms, is that out of serving and loving through action, not like, what's that cry? I don't really feel like it right now. A little bit tired. It's like you've got to get up and you're going to the, you're so tired you can barely stand, but you're trying to like pacify and it's burping and all these kind of, it's all you do. How much do you love that baby 2 years down the line? It's God's design. It's not my thoughts, it's His design. It's how it works. You, through action, love someone. Your feelings catches up very quickly. And what we found over the years, your feelings goes way beyond what it originally was when it was just kind of like romantic affection feelings. So when I say I love Antoinette, it's a different kind of love to when we first got married. But it didn't come by us constantly working on our feelings for one another. It just doesn't work that way. So when we say sacrificially commit to the benefit of the other, in one word, serve. So for husbands, you can serve by really working hard, but then you can come home with your remote on the couch. Or you can, hey, let me see how I can help my wife. She's also had a hectic day. You try and be with the kids all day. Or try and balance your own work pressures with kids. So like, how do we serve one another? It gets really practical very quickly. We don't have to go too far. Like, hey, how do I make like sense of covenant in my marriage? It's actions that precedes feelings, not the other way around. Bonhoeffer's quote, what did he say? The covenant from this day forward sustains the love, not the love, the covenant. Don't get the order wrong. That's what he's basically saying. And I think if we look at, it's a great book, The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller. He says, we can't just say, well, let's just go into action. This is not just action kind of duty thing. We've got to think it through. We've got to understand what does the gospel have to say. Let's understand what Jesus did. When Ephesians 5 says, love like Christ loved the church, what does that mean? And you think it through. And then he writes, this means we must say to ourselves something like this. Well, when Jesus looked down from the cross, he didn't think, I'm giving myself to you because you are so attractive to me. No, he was in agony. And he looked down at us being the ones that deny him, us being the ones that abandon him, us being the ones that betrayed him. And in the greatest act of love in history, he stayed. Because he could have called
however many angels, taking him from that cross and just straight back to heaven. But his covenantal love made him stay. And that's my encouragement to you. When I say stay, I mean I'm here for the long haul. Till death do us part, I'm staying. Not because I've resolved it in my own heart, there's something of that, but I'm drawing from the reality of the gospel. I'm drawing from the reality of God strengthening me and putting his love in my heart and allowing me to commit to my spouse in such a way that I will, like Rory said on Sunday, I will refuse some things and I will choose some things. I will refuse bitterness and resentment. I will choose forgiveness. I will refuse passivity. I will choose serving. I will refuse options. I will choose an exclusive relationship. I will refuse to go. I will choose to stay. May you be encouraged. Covenant is huge. We need to lay hold of the reality of this. In our relationship with one another, we need to talk it through. That's why I love the idea of when things have gone cold and you've just lost your way and you get to that point through God's grace of saying, you know what, let's just start again. Nothing more beautiful than a renewing of vows when you know what you're doing for the first time. You were too young to know what you were doing when you did it the first time, but and we don't have to do a ceremony for that. That can be you and your wife sitting on bed, just holding hands and looking at one another saying, today I choose. I promise you, we're in for the rest of our lives. And I will love you through my actions more than through my feelings. And that can be a reciprocated thing. I promise you, that solves a myriad of problems. There's still way more to come, so we've got 4 weeks ahead. But that is a starting point. It's God's basis for marriage. That's the essence of what it is. That's the engine that keeps your marriage running. Amen.